This is a JRPG. Heavy J, heavy R, heavy P, heavy G.
All four heavy.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm not prepared, Nolan.
And this is episode 287, a Patreon pull.
It's a Patreon pull.
It is the first Patreon pool of our summer pool party, wow, in which we are going to be playing a Patreon submitted game each and every week this summer, at least in the month of July. Thank you for those of you that already jumped on. And if you'd like to jump on, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/NGP podcast. Summer Games Done Quick is now live. It's not currently live while we're recording this, but when this episode goes live, it will be live.
Nice.
There are many NGP featured games, including Mega Man X, Spyro the Dragon, screw you guys, Shadow of the Colossus,
Ninja Gaiden, Gaiden.
Gaiden. It's Ninja Gaiden. Battletoads, Earthworm Jim, which was the first game that we ever played on this podcast, as well as other games that are not NGP related, like Mass Effect 2 and Majora's Mask.
Donkey Kong Country 3.
Castlevania, a whole segment of Castlevania games, and games like Nintendogs. Are either of you planning on watching any this year, and are there any games or runs that you're particularly looking forward to?
Yes. Hey, did you say it's in person or no? You told me last week, and I don't remember if it's still live, if they're still doing it from home because of COVID or not.
I believe they're together again.
They are together. Good. Then certainly.
I might be wrong, though, but I believe that they're together again.
Either way, yes, I do plan on watching because the last like four that you've brought up on the podcast, I have missed and gone back like after the fact. Anyways, on the first day, I noticed that there is Oracle of Ages, and that is my favorite like handheld Zelda. So I'm absolutely going to watch that. And also The Runner. I'm not familiar with that person, but I am familiar with the speedrun, just like it being close to Link's Awakening as a style, and I used to speedrun the game. But I want to watch all of it. I'm feeling like putting it on and letting it roll in the background like I used to. That's the best way to do it.
Instead of
I have to be there at 5 p.m. No, just have it on. So that's what I'm going to do during work this week.
Yeah, that's what I used to do, and it was the best. And then in recent years where I've had to be an adult, I would go back and watch, because they always aggregate all of them. Is that a proper way to use that word?
Yes, sure.
Where you can just click on the ones that you want to watch, and so they set it up real nicely. Kenny, any that you're particularly looking forward to?
I want to check out the Breath of the Wilds All Dungeons Run. I think that's fun. They just do some really fun speedrunny stuff for that.
I tried to learn that one. It's really hard.
Don't know if I'll do it live or watch it after the fact. It probably depends on how good our game of the week is. Because like through Monday, I probably won't catch any, but then later in the week, I may.
I love GDQ both summer. Like, I always have thought it was good. It's cringy, right? I mean, you know what you're getting into. But so many of the runs, and the runs that end up being the most entertaining for me are the ones that I didn't expect. And it's about games that I don't necessarily care about in and of themselves, but in the way that they run them. Like, whether it's blindfolded or just some, they do crazy things. And it's so entertaining.
The gimmicks are funny. I think the Ninja Gaiden run that I mentioned is going to be a pacifist run. How do you play that game in that way? I don't even know, but yeah, it's silly and fun.
I'm with you. Like, there's so many games on there that I either didn't know about or just thought was like, okay, who cares? But then when they like speedrun it, you're like, you see the appreciation that they have for it because they spend so much time on it to figure it out. And it's just like really, really entertaining. And so usually the commentary is pretty good, but Oh, wait, no, it's not. I'm talking about the people leading the...
instant change.
Yeah, no, I'm the people on the couch, bad. Not good, right. Usually. But the people on the mic running the thing are usually really great.
Absolutely. Hey, this just in, Parm.
Are you okay?
No.
Do you want me to explain what just happened to people listening?
No.
Dustin just showed us a picture of Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, no reason to get all puffy. Sue me if you'd like, but we've got to talk about all of these things in our retro game of the week, Grandia.
Overview.
Grandia is a JRPG that was developed by Game Arts, and it was published by Sony. You don't know Game Arts. You don't know the developer.
And you don't know Sony.
You don't know Sony.
Someone might.
No, you don't, because it's I thought, well, maybe they did a lot of games. They did like five. I don't know. They don't have a lot to their name, and I think they worked in close association with Square a little bit, and like, I don't know. It's a weird
I think there is one set of games, a series, the Lunar series,
fairly popular.
Luna.
Or at least known. You know, it was successful.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it. But anyways, they developed this JRPG that's not a Square Enix game, or a Square game at the time, I guess it would have been.
Right.
I was surprised to know that, because I've heard of this game a bit, and just as like a PlayStation title that people talk about being quality, and I would have assumed that it was Square, but it's definitely not. Continuing with that unique thing, the game originally came out on Sega Saturn, not PlayStation.
We haven't played many. Sega Saturn was a commercial flop, right? It was a failure.
I don't know. I think so, because I had nothing to do with it, but that doesn't mean that it was a flop.
From my understanding, it was popular in Japan, at least for a bit. But when it came over here, I feel like it came over too late. Yeah. And consoles like the N64 came out and then just completely wrecked and revolutionized the way that we're playing games in the US, at least. And so, I don't know. I just know that there are not many... What Sega Saturn titles are there? Like, this is one of them, but most... people in the US, at least, are going to know it, or North America, are going to know it from the PlayStation, not from Sega Saturn.
Yeah, I almost treat it like a Dreamcast situation. Dreamcast was more successful, I think, but I mean, it's just one of those like B-tier consoles when you put it up against the PlayStation. Like, come on.
The Saturn did have some Sonic games on it.
Oh, okay. So the game came out in 97 in Japan. And then it was ported to the PlayStation 2 years later. That's a late port. Usually games come out like the same year, a couple months later, maybe the next year. But 2 years is a delayed port.
In the 90s. They had to have time to do translation. They had to do the technical work of the port. And then they had to do all of the voiceover work, which they spent a lot of time on.
Listen, I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not. I'm sure they did spend time on it. But then by the time it got out over here for the PlayStation, the JRPGs we had are JRPGs like Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, Legend of Dragoon, Alundra. We had all of these, what I would imagine many people would consider, well, more successful, if not better, more successful JRPG titles. And so when this came out, it's obvious why it could be overlooked or overshadowed.
Sure. Now, that's not to say it's not unique looking. Like, just based on the cover art, it does look different than a lot of those games that you just mentioned. Theme, I suppose. Like, it still looks anime like all those other ones, but I guess we'll get into it. It just looks different.
It has a unique style, though, to its look, for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely does.
Both in-game and outside of the game, it seems unique. But the game follows Justin is a young boy that has hopes of being an adventurer, and in this world Parm is his hometown. Parmesan,
that's what's up.
In this world, they're flat earthers, and they think that the world has been explored fully. And so this idea of being an adventurer is kind of really silly. And so people around Justin think he's a little stupid kid, because he is, but for other reasons. Justin and Sue, which is the other pun. I'm trying to hit
for
all
other
the puns
reasons.
That Dustin listened. Sue is no your, like,
take on thing.
Yeah.
Sue's your friend, and you start very, very lighthearted, playing little kid games, and obviously, just like every other JRPG in the world, you get thrown into this grand story where this character, General Ball, and his son, Mullen, are the enemies, I guess. And they are looking for this ancient power, and you find something similar and get tangled up into this big world's gonna end mess kind of thing. So that's the setup for the story, and that's pretty much all I got to do in the first play, is just read and walk around.
Just to be clear, General Ball or Bale is the leader of the Garlisle forces,
right?
Which we've got someone in our community who goes by the moniker Garlisle, so that's interesting.
Did he get it from
and
there?
Then I think he said it's one of the games that inspired it, but not the primary okay. game. Right. So, and then on top of that, as already mentioned, this is a Patreon pool. So this game right. was submitted by two of our patrons, Kyle Shreve and Charlie Hoffman. Okay, so they, two of them, and one of them in particular, we'll read their commentary later, joined Patreon
oh.
so that Grandia would eventually be played on the podcast. So he got his wish. Again, if you want your wish to come true, if you want join. Kenny to make your dreams come true, okay. then join us on Patreon.
Gameplay.
As mentioned, this is a JRPG. Heavy J, heavy R, heavy P, heavy G.
All
heavy
three.
P.
All four heavy.
It is another anime-esque, like, we played Trauma Center, right? And
this is not as anime. Nearly over the top anime as Trauma Center.
Correct. Oh, but it's anime in the JRPG sense of things. Like, this is a very stereotypical, in a lot of ways, JRPG, where it is heavy story. You are a child of a single parent. Your mom gives you an allowance on your way out. Like, this is Pokemon, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then she knows you're going on a mission around the world as like an 11-year-old right. kid. She's like, see you when you get back.
sure. Yeah, she's like, okay, can you, when you on your way back home, can you stop by the store and give me some milk or something?
Exactly. And like you mentioned, Nolan, you start off on a relatively small thing that you're doing, and you end up saving the world. We're going into space, probably.
Yes. So you're right.
So
it's typical J.
It's all of those things. And then, but even more so, Nolan, for your first play, the first play is what, probably 12 minutes. Did a few cuts, right? So with the cutscenes and stuff, it would be a good 15 to 20, maybe even
it
more minutes.
It would have been 20. My recording was 20.
Okay, but you still had time to go, and you have not gotten into any battle or really gameplay yet.
No, I wasn't even close, really.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, it's a lot of setup.
There's so much setup here. Here's how I described it. I said this game has more introductions than Lord of the Rings has endings.
Okay.
Like, it's just so many.
Yeah, it's a good, legitimate 30 minutes before any battle takes place. It could be longer than that if you're going around and talking to everybody, but there's tons of story up front.
I'm fine with that, by the way. I know some people really want to get into the meat of the games that they play, including like battle system JRPG. I wasn't even like looking for it, you know?
And I could be wrong. As you get further into the game, maybe the pace just crazy accelerates, but I just had a sense that that was what this game was. It is not a short game. You're putting in 40 plus hours at least.
Or for me, you're putting in 80 for completionist.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just talking like you're just normal person pace, maybe even a little aggressively just getting through the story. It's going to take you, you know, a full time amount of work. But it's because they've got a lot to tell.
They do. But it is also because they tell it in a slow way.
Yes.
Nolan, I thought you did remarkably well with the first play because there wasn't any action, but there, but something that is pretty remarkable here, because a lot of games, I think, can't do that up front. They can't expect you to go 30 minutes without having to do anything major, 45 minutes without having to do anything major, and hold your attention. Yeah. But this game immediately, and you catch it in your first play, really takes you by surprise, even compared to other JRPGs of the time, because of the way that it's presented visually, because of the musically, and then just there's a charm to it at the beginning. And yeah, it's this is what it's doing at first. It's not building out as much story. It's building out the character of Justin and Sue, really, and their relationship.
And the world's even a little bit. The tone and the humor and the fact that you're able to talk to NPCs and not just talk to them once,
right,
but talk to them multiple times and get different responses back. The fact that it's not a silent protagonist, that you're actually like hearing things and able to to choose dialogue in a number of places, which is not always the case. Like, it just fleshes out kind of what your experience is going to be really early.
I said this in the first play. It doesn't feel anime. So when we say that it looks anime and like Trauma Center, you know, the presentation's like anime, it felt more like a HBO special, like a TV show, because it's so cinematic. Not in the plot, but in the presentation. So the first standout thing to me is the camera. And for RPGs, it's either going to be a top-down view, or it's going to be around this time, like Final Fantasy VII, where you've got like pre-rendered backdrops and you're just kind of like, it's just different each time. In this case, you're like in full control. You have your R1 and L1 control the camera rotation, which doesn't fit in JRPGs in my mind.
Of camera. Yeah.
Oh, no, I know. That isn't a JRPG feature.
It's unique.
It was
really
so weird feeling early, and took me a little while to adjust to it and not be off-put by it. But so my immediate reaction was, why in the world would they do this? It's going to be annoying. And then once I got used to it a little bit, it was, okay, this is going to be annoying. I'm going to be lost all the time. But then, I learned how the compass works, which really gives you a sense of orientation, even though you can sort of freely rotate, and once I learned that there's the little select button map to kind of reorient me to the space I'm in at any point, instead I went, throw it all out the window. This is actually a really clever way of doing it, because they're going to be able to hide stuff creatively, make you explore in interactive ways. The kind of like puzzles they're going to be able to set up are going to work completely differently than in a world where things are just completely flat and you have a limited view. And I actually got a little bit hyped about it.
Well, isn't it kind of the reverse of what Final Fantasy VII did? I don't know if y'all are familiar with Final Fantasy VII. It's an RPG game. But I think they did 3D character models with 2D backgrounds. You kind of alluded to that, Nolan.
Have we played it on the podcast?
We actually have, yeah. Episode 70-something, I think, actually. I don't know. 80. I don't know. 81. But yeah, you 3D character models with 2D pre-rendered backgrounds, and here it's just completely different. So, well, I'm sure we'll talk more about that in age, but that really helps to make everything feel alive. And I don't want to miss this fact. My favorite part in JRPGs is not talking to NPCs, but that is a part of JRPGs.
Yeah.
But typically, it's not the most fun because they have one line of dialogue. They say, your character doesn't respond, and that dialogue never changes, no matter if you're a boy in town or you just saved the world, right?
Yep.
This game is nuts in that, you already said it all, so I hate to even just say it again, but I want to emphasize that there are multiple lines of dialogue, so you can talk multiple times. You can even choose dialogue options from time to time, but then on top of that, there are evolving lines of dialogue based on what you've done or what's happening in the world. So you come back to a town, and the dialogue for every NPC that you find is dynamically is a better word, different than what it previously was because of things that you've done.
That's not to be overlooked in 1997.
No one's doing that in this genre, especially
because it's in these games, they give you the illusion of like an option sometimes, but the answer is always yes.
Right.
Right. Always.
But that's not ahead of its time. In Skyrim, you save the world and become the Dragonborn. You just defeat a dragon outside of town and rescue everybody, and then you go to prison for accidentally bumping into someone. Like nothing changes.
Still talking about the arrow in the knee.
Right. Like, right. Care. Yeah. So yeah, ahead of its time.
Yes. And like, I don't associate that with. So when you just described it that way, I thought of Fallout New Vegas, like the new Fallout games, not 4. Ah. 3 in New Vegas in particular, where you make decisions and it affects things. It's not the same, but it does more than other games did at this time. And I think that's really, really cool.
Okay.
We've talked about some of the initial cool things when we just jump into town and are getting through the story. I think once you finally get into all of the battles, we ought to talk about how the battle system works as well, because it's rather unique here. First off, this is one of those games where you can see that you're going to get into battles, not hidden random battles, but overworld battles with your monsters visualized, which is, I think everybody has a preference for like, I'm torn. I don't generally prefer it. I felt like it was okay here. I felt like it worked with the visual look and the amount of grind you had to do and a number of other things.
My preference is all things Final Fantasy VII. So, no, I prefer the randomized encounters. So, but these don't bother me. The thing that I dislike is that then it really limits how many battles you get into in any environment because they don't respawn.
Yes. That's kind of what I was getting at. For the most part. It's just
so like
different.
But it takes away grinding, which is a JRPG feature.
Yes.
So it's this weird, like, it is JRPG, but then they do a lot of things that are different. But yeah, Kenny, this game is lauded for its novel combat mechanics. And while they're good, in my opinion, I think for the most part, they can be completely ignored without any consequences. And I think that's a detriment.
Kenny, continue to explain, because you're about to say something really important about it.
I'm not sure which important thing I was going to say, but I think there's a number of important things to point out. I think the leveling system is somewhat unique. It's certainly not something that no other game has ever done, but I like the use your skills to level up those skills mantra. The whole you've got to choose points or just the everything levels up evenly no matter what feels a lot less realistic to me. And so there's something about like you want to be good at a set of skills, use them, that always has felt real, real capital R in the role playing appropriate. I also think that the option of, and I don't know if you guys played with this at all. I didn't. This was more something I sort of like read about in researching the game, but that the amount of options they gave you to like automate the battles, if you chose to not care about that, and the diversity of options you had for styles of like pre-configured battle automation,
like
felt
defensive.
Super novel. Yeah, and like, and a total something I would use in a game like this if I was playing it for the first time and like kind of chilling out and just wanting to go through the story.
Yeah, no, I used it big time. You can choose, more defensive, more offensive, but you can even choose certain setups that power up your abilities or that just all out use all your magic as much as possible.
Or focus on like negative statuses for the enemies. Or like there's like 6 or 7 different paradigms you can work in.
The thing that I think is most novel, Nolan, is the whole, I think they call it the IP bar, but it's like an active time bar that's visible down at the bottom of the screen. Nolan, you in your first play, not related to combat, but you mentioned Child of Light. I don't know if it was an aesthetic thing or
it
what.
It was, yeah, it was.
But if you've ever played Child of Light, I think they even say, the developers of Child of Light, Grandia was an inspiration because it's the exact... Yeah. Not the exact same. It is a very inspired battle system.
Yeah.
I didn't put that together, but it totally is.
Totally is.
So I need to go back and play that game as well.
Oh,
I never finished it.
Quick overview of what that is a bar in the bottom. ATB is usually like a gauge that just fills a gauge. But this is like a visual representation of the enemies and your team. And everyone is moving to the right, and it shows who's coming up next and the order of who's going to be moving next. And that, I really like the visualization of that because it made me feel like I could really plan out my next move.
Tactics.
Not, not only is the visualization of it great, but there's information that you can use from that to change how you're affecting your battles. Because you have the option to do attacks that basically focus on damage, or to do attacks that have the opportunity of interrupting the enemy if they happen at the right time. And your attacks, certain ones, your magic skills, etc., have the option of being interrupted depending on which attacks the enemy use and when they use them. And so there's this whole sort of like real-time dynamic, you have to be thinking about what you want to do set of options that's sort of on the complete flip side of I want to just turn off this passive thing and have the battles done for me, that makes it feel really, really active. So you can kind of like wherever you're happy in how you want to do battles, you can find a way of doing those in this game. It's fairly unique.
Yeah. The thing that is somewhat unfortunate is that there is a revolving cast of characters that you get to use. That's a good thing. The unfortunate thing is that y'all may have played 4 or 5 hours this week and never gotten to your first new character in your party.
Yeah, scripted, like, right?
Scripted as in what?
As in, like, the party members are rotated in and out depending on when you're in the story. Yeah, but
I'm just saying that the first new character doesn't come for until 5-6 like, hours into the game,
literally on a completely different continent.
Yeah,
is it Fiend
or on the way there? Pirate girl. But she, like,
you can't just say pirate girl. Why? You might mean the mom.
Hey, I know
it is.
Cool.
It's not that the Justin's first pirate
mom
girl
is
you
a pirate
meet.
Girl. Spoiler alert, but I love rotating casts and I love expansive casts. But again, this, you could play for a week. You could play for a good 4, 5, 6 hours and just think it's a two person party the entire time.
Yeah, and it's hard to get to that point too, because Justin's such a little.
Justin's fine. He just wants to go on
an
adventure.
He's a troublemaker.
I know.
Nolan wants that disciplined kid that has no dreams or aspirations.
Aged. Obviously, one of the most impressive things that we've already kind of talked about, because it is one of the most impressive things, is the art direction. Kind of everything about that visual input is interesting and worth talking about. We've kind of already extensively talked about the camera control, the L and R to be able to swing your camera all the way around, which is interesting. But one of the things that I always love are little character sprites that show up when dialogue is happening. And the thing that I absolutely love with this one is that there's not just one character sprite per character. Justin himself has 27 character portraits. Character, like facial expressions.
Yes.
That's one character alone to be used throughout the game. And that
is your main character.
Okay, yeah, sure.
It's obviously the one with the most faces.
No, there's some characters with even more.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. But
almost every single character has multiple character portraits that go along with the dialogue, and they emote or change based on what's happening with the dialogue. It's another attention to detail thing that I think just ages remarkably.
And they're big portraits. They're really big and really detailed. And it felt like a comic book a lot this week. And I like that too. I think it adds depth where there usually isn't. Like text, let's just use Final Fantasy VII since we've said it 4 times now. When you have text and dialogue outside of cutscenes in that game, it's just a blue box with white text and there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And so it really does add a lot when you've got not only the portrait, but then like emotions along with it. I think it's cool too.
I would have loved it in Final Fantasy VII if they would have added that.
And they tried to take it that much further in the storytelling too by often having voiceovers done for some of this dialogue as well. Which, I know you asked if I was being sarcastic earlier, but the answer is absolutely yes. I couldn't stand the voiceover work for this game. I appreciated how much they put in and that they tried, but it felt really subpar to me.
I didn't care for it.
Okay, so that's both of you. That's also most of the reviewers. That's people in Discord this week, and I thought there is nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's not like I think it is exactly what we're getting for voice acting in video games of that time. Actually, we're not getting voice acting in most video games
during that
time.
I just thought, don't
put it in.
Feels like, which is fine, because they didn't have it in the Sega Saturn. They didn't have it in the Is that Sega Saturn? They didn't have it in the Sega Saturn.
They couldn't fit it on that trash console.
English specific. That was English specifically. So they thought they were adding something. And yes, it's not the most. It's not, you know, your professional voice actors of the 21st century, or the best ones at least. But they it added something.
It's not like it's. It's not like it's. Well, at places it is. I don't know. When I notice it. And it makes me roll my eyes or be like, really? They didn't just like try one more take on at least that line like more than once. Yeah. You missed something. It certainly was an area that could have used more love.
But they had voice acting.
Well,
I think
sure.
Don't do it though. If you're going to have that little and then it's not going to be that good, just don't try.
I don't think you can say just including something in a game means it's a good thing. There's lots of bad implementations of things that other games do well that were like, they did it so bad and ruined the game. I don't know. Obviously, voice acting isn't as high stakes as gameplay mechanics or like UX or something, but like, come on.
They're better than you. Give me a line.
Voice acting?
Give me a line. Give me a line.
False.
Give me a Justin line. How would you do a Justin line?
I wouldn't do Justin.
I wouldn't either. Justin's worse. I'll uppercut him.
No.
Plus hey, guys! It's me, Justin!
That's actually good.
I mean, like you're making fun of it and it might be better than theirs.
They should have hired
Do you want to do Puffy or Sue?
I don't. I'm not going to do voices. I'm not going to prove to you that someone else was bad by making a fool of myself.
That would be perfect.
I would do good voice work, though, if I was ever paid to.
Oh, yeah? Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, totally.
The music, it's a game that's also remarked on for how good the music is. I think the opening song is good. I thought all the music was good. I just think they're relatively short tracks, and so they're pretty repetitious. But there's a lot of music there.
Agreed. And there's a few places it felt a little heavy-handed, just sort of like what they were doing. Some of that maybe was intentional, but like the first time you meet the three annoying like general sisters, and some other times it's just like they could have toned the musical choices back a little bit. But I didn't hate it. Okay, it was pretty well done.
I actually noticed it in the negative direction this week because of the theme and the way that it. So the theme of this game is what? Steampunk? Or
nah.
It's fantasy, but like it has machinery and like that's a big part of the environment and like what's going on. And it felt a little disconnected, actually. Like it affected the world building for me, and I didn't get super far in the game. But I'm surprised that you said that people like regard it as like a really good soundtrack. I thought it was standard and if not a little distracting based on the theme of the game.
I don't know. When you move to CDs rather than like cartridges,
sure.
You have a lot more flexibility on what you can do musically. And I think they take advantage of that. I guess it might be a preference thing. I enjoyed the music. Yeah. And like I said, I think there's a good variety there. Like even there's a main battle theme, but when you are ambushed, that battle theme changes to be a little bit more ominous or bad. So I don't know. I thought And just in general, my opinion is that this game, they really paid attention to a lot of details. Whether or not you like those details are fine, but at least
absolutely.
They are really paying attention.
They tried, which so often is a huge marker for me as to whether a game overall is going to be cohesive and good and enjoyable, regardless of some of the decisions made along the way. You can tell they leaned into all the stuff and all the choices.
Just a second, Nolan, because Kenny, just trying doesn't make it a good thing. A lot of games try, but it doesn't just automatically make it good.
He's getting
it does.
Another thing I'll say about the way that this game is aged, they need to thank Sony.
Why?
Because it wouldn't be as known, first of all, obviously, because the PlayStation brought it to the States. Essentially, I guess you could look at it that way. And like you said, PlayStation was way more popular than Sega Saturn. And so many people got to play this game because of the port. And that's what we played this week. In fact, the Sega Saturn version was the one that was submitted to the list. But we were like, nah. So that definitely helps it age just because that platform was so iconic.
Yeah, but really the PlayStation brought the game directly over. Like there yeah. are some differences, but pretty much not even noticeable. And now you will notice the difference between both those versions and the Switch version, which is the most recent one, because they it came out for the Switch somewhat recently. They did a release or remake of it.
In 2019.
All they did was pretty much put a visible filter over it, which some people don't like as much. I thought it looked good, like an HD kind of, but some people don't like that. But pretty much with Saturn and PlayStation, you're getting the same game. The graphics look slightly different, and I think it's another preference thing on which one you prefer. If you want it for the Saturn, that's going to be $5 used and $15 new.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah. I do.
$15 for a new game for the Sega Saturn. PlayStation, a little bit more. $50 used and $275 new.
Yeah. No one has a Saturn? What are you going to play that on?
Hey, I thought it was interesting. We didn't say, but Ubisoft was the one, what were the publishers for EU for this game.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
Wait, really? I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Kenny, are you remarking on how I pronounce that?
Yeah,
that
I is thought how he was about to it. Make fun of you because he smirked.
No, I know, but I just I, don't. So oh, many I hate times, it. So many times you say things, and regardless, I dislike
he's
them.
He's saying it the way you're supposed to, I think, though, is what he's
right.
saying.
Yeah, that is no, the way I'm that you're not, supposed to say
I'm not questioning that.
Like, I think Kenny was thinking Uber soft, and that causes him to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Nolan, I'm actually most interested in your final thoughts this week, because I do not know where you've landed.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know much about this game going into it. I knew the name, period. And I knew PlayStation. But that's not even
Grandia.
Yeah. Like, I knew PlayStation, but that's not even the console it came out on. After playing it for a couple hours, I realized I wasn't going to give it New Game Plus because the story was not that interesting to me. But more than that, the gameplay, like the actual core of the game, once you get to the battles and stuff like that, I thought that, and I didn't mention this in gameplay, the pacing was really off for me. And I'm not sure how to put it into words other than I just felt like I was slowed down artificially, like by the developers, like they wanted me to experience the game a different way. I don't know. It did not click for me. And I'm not going to just give it New Game Plus because I think it's like I wouldn't call it a classic, but a lot of people really speak highly of this game. So no New Game Plus for me.
Okay.
This just in, Nolan doesn't like going on adventures and he likes following all the rules.
The world's already been explored. It's flat.
Nolan's world has already been explored. He's found the end of the world and he's okay with that.
I think I can put it into words, Nolan. It's pacing. You're exactly correct. Here's what I'll say. I think you play this game for 30 minutes and you'll be stunned at how interesting, unique, and charming it is. I think then you play for an hour and you'll be bored, or many gamers will be bored because of the pacing. But then I think you put 5, 6, 7 hours in and you realize, no, this game is great, expansive, builds on a lot of the JRPG tropes, but does some unique things. And I think that you'll be hooked. I think the pacing is all sorts of whack and it doesn't do it any favors. But I went past that bored, slow, monotonous phase into the greater depths of the game. And I haven't even gotten a fourth of the way through, or maybe close to getting a fourth of the way through, but I'm in now. And so like it is rolling forward and moving forward, and I'm not just spinning the, I'm not just walking around finding a mop bucket to be my helmet, you know, like it is much more of a story with new characters, cool environments. And I think it's pretty remarkable of a game. So I think, yes, it is a game that everybody should play, because I think even for a 30 minute experience, you'll be like, this is really cool. I've controlled the camera, a lot of attention to detail with the sprites, all of that stuff. And then whether or not you want to keep playing it, totally up to you. But if you put in the investment, I think you'll really like it and find a good JRPG. I am saying yes, not just because it's a JRPG and some people think I give every JRPG my vote for New Game Plus status.
You kind of do.
You do.
But because I think it is a unique JRPG with a lot of charm that deserves our vote. I do not think Kenny's going to give it because
why?
And Nolan didn't give it, but it does. It is in Kenny's hands. And here's the what Kenny, he's, oh, I hate it being in my hands and my decision. We got that over with.
Okay.
Kenny,
what's your answer?
Unsurprisingly, yes, I give this game New Game Plus status.
Unsurprisingly.
I say unsurprisingly, not because of the content of the episode that's led up to it, or because this is a super well-known title, like really. I don't think it is. I think it's got some cult following. But the because it's a Patreon pool. No, not because of the parm. Often, and not always, but we get games that are suggested because people love them and because at least somebody goes, man, that game was worthwhile to me. There's times that we go, yeah, it was worthwhile to you as a kid, and now you're an adult and you were stupid as a kid. Or whatever.
That's what I'm saying.
Like your taste is trash and we just say a game is not good. And there's times that people give us suggestions because they're terrible games and they are trolling us. But this was not one of those. I think people genuinely like this game. And that came through for me this week. I had a couple of complaints and sometimes I rolled my eyes, but it was more in storytelling kinds of things that are pretty forgivable. Overall, I felt like the world was unique, which you can't always say. I generally appreciated how they did storytelling and took some unique takes on that. Even like having dinner time together and conversations over that was like super novel to me and a kind of cool mechanic and lots of little things like that that just sort of worked for me. I'm with you guys. Not super far in, but this absolutely goes on my list of games I will go back and probably revisit because I think it's worth playing.
That's cool. I will say, just not that anybody cares, but it's not my favorite style. I like my JRPGs to be more gritty and serious, and this is not. Like, seriously, the entire impetus that drives first of all, his name's Justin.
Justin.
And then the entire thing that drives him the whole time is just he wants to go on an adventure. And so, like, it is not
it's
like...
very innocent, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like the heavier things that I kind of love, but... 2 out of 3 of us still give it our vote, which means that Justin's game, Grandia, is New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had many people write in this week. I'll include a few of your thoughts right now, including the votes on our YouTube poll, which I promise you, this is not a joke, 420 votes again this week on the YouTube poll, 420.
You think it was exactly the same people as last week?
No.
Smoke.
37% said yes. Grandia is worth playing today. 4% said no, go play something else, but an overwhelming 59% have never played it before.
Sega Saturn.
Garlisle, from whence the name came, said, I'll take a break from my conquest of the world, I get it, yep, to write a bit about the game. It's got heart, lots of little details that give it life, a main character I enjoy greatly, and a battle system that adds a level of dynamic interaction to some fights that make them very interesting later. Keyword though, later. I know JRPGs getting interesting 20 hours in is kind of the genre joke, but Grandia really takes its sweet time getting all that engaging, both in battle and story. I still enjoy the game and definitely understand why some would love it nostalgically.
Sure.
But
it's English. Say what you want.
I'll allow it.
But despite being one of two games to share my name, it's definitely hard for me to point to something specific that makes it a must experience over the rest of its era of creative landmark RPGs.
I know it must be.
It does.
the genre meme that it takes a long time, but like, no, it doesn't. I think all the JRPGs I love start pretty strong.
And, start strong?
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of what I was missing here. I don't want to put 20 hours in before.
Chrono Trigger hooked me at like minute four. Like I totally can buy that. You can do it better than that.
Chrono Trigger is so good.
It is so good.
No,
it is
we're not on that.
No, it's not. It is a common thing for games to suffer from. Yeah.
Good,
I had something else
Kenny.
To say, but Nolan totally derailed me.
So. Tight.
Yeah. Logan said, I'm 9 hours into Grandia and the game feels like it's barely started. There's almost no overarching plot to speak of besides our protagonist wanting to go on an adventure. I don't even have a full party or much magic to let me experience all the depth of this great battle system. And yet, I found myself drawn in by all the little things it gets right. While there may be no grand plot threads yet, the game does a great job with the smaller moments. The game moves you between threads of character and world building at a good pace. I also don't think dungeon design gets much better than this. Every area you enter is full of branching pathways with secret items or traps. It's confusing enough to be compelling but not frustrating. Combine that with no random encounters, a unique battle system, plus great visuals and music, you've got something special. This is an easy NGP for me, and a game I'm looking forward to spending more time with.
It's worth the 60 or 70 bucks, whatever this cost when it came out. It's got that much content, so I'll give it that much. Like, you're going to get your money's worth out of it.
Yeah.
But hour nine? That's far.
He's like, hour nine and nothing's happened? But I like it. Bro Jim said, as we play more JRPGs on the podcast, I start to realize that I don't actually like the genre. I'm just a Final Fantasy VII fanboy who thought he did. That being said, I like unique titles. Grandia has a lot of the stereotypical tropes, but the tone and battle system had me revisiting it a lot this week. It has a certain charm that's hard to describe. It has a whimsical tone that almost lets me forget the ridiculous hide-and-seek opener that ate an hour of my time for no story payoff. Almost. I actually think I will finish it, as the re-release on the Switch and the rhythm of the game allows me to work through it almost episodically. I'm interested in seeing where this simple exploration slash adventure will lead and what other characters are going to be introduced. It won me over in GP.
That just is a testament to FF7. Like, it made someone that doesn't really like JRPGs for a second.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk more about Final Fantasy VII, but that's dangerous for me. We're all saying a similar thing. Everybody's saying, like, man, I think everybody's alluding to the pacing, you know, something being off with how long it takes to actually get into something. But they're like, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Kyle submitted the game. He was one of the patrons that submitted the game. He wrote in.
Thanks, Kyle.
A massive email. I had to cherry pick for the sake of not taking the entire episode to read. And he said this: I grew up in a small town out in the middle of nowhere in a pretty broken home. We didn't have the internet or even a computer. And once cell phones were invented, you couldn't get service out there. In a lot of ways, I felt isolated from the rest of the world and longed to get out, but I felt trapped. I rented this game in late middle school, and it opened my eyes to the idea of leaving my small town and exploring the world beyond my hometown. Long story short, I've had several adventures of my own since discovering Grandia. I've traveled around the world, seen the wonders of the world, learned languages, lived in other countries and cultures, and have no plan of stopping this lifestyle anytime soon. And you can trace all of this back to Grandia. Nostalgia aside, the game really shines through in three major elements. One, a unique combat and leveling system. Two, a lighthearted story and characters. And number three, a masterpiece of a soundtrack. It helped me through very hard and rough childhood and helped me hope that I could escape one day. I thankfully did and plan to keep the sense of adventure that Grandia gave me as a young boy alive in my heart for years to come.
Here's the deal. I know that I'm a sucker, but like, that's genuine watering right there.
Yeah,
I just like got a little emotional hearing that. That's so cool. Like,
that's one of the
inspirational story, and then like it meaning something to you is just, that's neat.
That's one of the best commentaries we've had, first of all. Second of all, I retract my statement about NGP. I'll give it NGP for you.
But what you're saying, the feeling is there, like when. And I love that, and I want to stick to that. No matter how good or bad I think a game might be, I love the fact that every game that most games will have some kind of divine impact on certain people. Yeah. And I think that's amazing.
Scars, that racing game we played for me. They all were like, this game's trash. And I was like, yeah, but I played it with my dad.
But
really
it meant something to me.
Yeah.
Love that. Kyle, thank you for sending in that commentary. Thank you for submitting the game and allowing us to play it as a part of Patreon. Thank you for supporting us on Patreon and allowing us to play your game. He did say in the email, but now if I become a director, I don't know what game I'll ever play because this is my game. Oh, Grandia 2. All right. So each and every week, you can send in your thoughts on the retro game of the week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or hop into our Discord, submit your commentary in the commentary channel, and we'll try to include your thoughts as a part of next week's episode, which we're going to randomly select now. And it's more fun than ever because it's not a random selection right now from our retro master list. It's another randomization from our Patreon pool.
What do we got
get
in there this
in
time?
Get in the pool with us.
It's a Patreon pool.
All right. We've got, again, a lot of Super Metroids.
Okay.
Unsurprising.
Trying again.
Okay. I'm sure they're going to keep swinging.
We've got games like Diddy Kong Racing from Brojim.
Love it.
Sweet.
We've got games like Fire Emblem for the GBA from Jordan Osteen.
Oh, not Bradley. Yeah.
We've got games like Commandos Behind Enemy Lines from Unbedavable, Time Splitters 2 from Anthony. We've got Dominique with Beautiful Joe and Minish Cap.
Ooh,
is Minish Cap good?
Minish Cap, yes.
It's good. We've got Joey Ketchum saying Need for Speed Most Wanted. Y'all want to play a racing game for a Patreon pull?
Yes.
And then Jessica gave us Tiny Toon Adventures for the NES. So there's a lot of games in here.
I kind of remember that game. I'm pulling for NES.
All right. There's good, bad, and in between. At least I don't think Bill's Shaq Fu, or what game is he kept putting on here? He keeps putting
I've played on Shaq Fu.
Yeah. All right. Randomizing now. Developed and published by Sega.
Yes!
This game came out in 1992 for the Mega Drive and the Genesis.
Okay.
It is a sequel.
If you say Sonic 2.
It was released in Japan as Bare Knuckles 2, The Requiem of the Deadly Battle. But the game was released for us as Streets of Rage 2. Don't let your excitement bubble over.
Nolan thought we were getting something
else. Getting Sonic 2. Have we played Sonic 2 on the podcast?
No, I don't think so. This is a side-scrolling beat-em-up video game. And Streets of Rage is like the classic.
It's the classic. Very, very popular. And I've never enjoyed it. We'll see what happens.
Oh, really?
I've played the first one.
TMNT?
I've never played the second one.
Yeah, I've never played the second one either. Played a lot of the first one, never the second one.
I think it's on Nintendo Switch Online, I think.
Ooh. You know Kenny's Theory, though, right?
Wait, yeah, it's sequels, not on there. Sequels, dog.
I don't know. That's a Sega I don't know game. If it's on there. But it is commonly regarded as the best entry in the series and the best beat-em-up game for the Genesis and one of the greatest video games of all time, according to its own Wikipedia page.
The last one, stop.
According to its own Wikipedia page.
Wait, all right. Yeah, didn't we have a developer one time that was talking about his own game like it was the best?
All right, that game was submitted by Pedro, so thank you so much. Pedro. We're looking forward to playing it. Grab a copy of Streets of Rage 2 and play along with us this week.
Can also grab a copy of Sonic 2 and join me in our Discord.
No!
I will be playing Sonic 2 this week. Go to ngppodcast.com and click join us on Discord, and you can start chatting with us and our community, and you can leave your commentary for Streets of Rage 2, and maybe we'll read it on the episode.
While you're hanging out in Discord, you might meet some of our favorite people. The pillars of our community are producers who support us on patreon.com. Such as Anthony, Amarlian, Austin, Ben, Bethany Fox, Carrie, Dan the Man, Francesca, Hi, I'm Josh, Corey, Maxima, Nowell, Secret Duck of Evermore, Shauna, Thomas, Unbedavable, Wardonis, William, and Zion. And a big, doubly huge shout out to our director level supporters, Antonin Garlisle, the titular, I guess not actually, Bro Jim and Jordan. And thanks as well to Jordan, who upped his contribution this week.
Yeah, a different Jordan. Thank you so much. And seriously, patrons, not only do you make the summer pool party happen, you make our podcast happen. Kenny has made it clear before, we would do this without patronage. It would look and sound a lot worse without patronage.
It'd be so much worse.
We gotta keep the lights on.
Right now, seriously, like this last week, the three of us are talking about when we're able to do certain things and how we're starting to make plans for this year of how we can celebrate certain milestones that you have helped us make. So thank you so much. You're keeping our friendship alive and this podcast alive. So thank you so much. You can follow us on all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. All of those links are in the show notes. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, please leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play the Patreon pool game Streets of Rage 2. Until then, I'm still Justin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm heating up.
And this has been a Parmesan exclusive episode of New Game Plus.